About a half century ago, one of the two or three most famous comedians in America was named Jack Benny. And by far, his most famous joke was pretending to be an old man who's walking along the street and he is held up by a young man with a gun. The guy puts the gun in his stomach and says, "Your money or your life?" And Benny doesn't answer. And the guy said, "I said, your money or your life?" And Benny says, I'm thinking. So this illustrated, of course, to everybody watching, and the reason why they laughed about it was the obvious foolishness of his value system, thinking that his money would matter if he had no life. Thinking that his money would matter if he had no life. And I bring this up because of the beginning of this morning's parsha, where it says, "Speak to the priests, the sons of Aaron." And when I read that, I thought, why does it say both? After all, the priests are the sons of Aaron, and the sons of Aaron are the priests. We know that from previous parshiot. It's a tautology. It just repeats itself. It's nothing new. But I think the Torah is making an important and a subtle point, which is, who are the priests really? They're the sons of Aaron. They're not what they do. It's not their job that defines them. It's their family. It's their life. When someone asks your money or your life, they may as well be asking your job or your family. And you notice that the Torah comes down on the definition of the sons of Aaron. I want to spin this out into three different kinds of implications, all of them known to us, but all of them important and powerful. How does this play out? The first thing is, after calling them the sons of Aaron, what does the Torah do? It then begins to instruct them. Because the first obligation, after the simple, basic preservation of human need that you have in a family, is to educate them, to teach them. I stopped a moment ago to prove to Mr. Nazarian that I was not saying this only because he was here this morning, but it was actually in my notes that I was going to speak about the Magbit dinner that I was at the other night. You know, Magbit is a foundation that gives scholarships to people in Israel, but the word Magbit in Hebrew means what? Treasury or fund. That's all it means. And I always liked the idea that when you say to Jews, "We're establishing a fund," and you don't give it any more definition than that, what do they assume it must be for? It's either for feeding people or educating them. Because Vishinantem Livanecha, and you shall teach your children, a phrase that I will return to in just a minute, that is, after all, our central task. So much so that I once did a little study, I won't go through all of it with you, of stages of life. You know, every different tradition tells you, at this age you should be doing this, and at this age you should be doing that. And listen to the difference between the way Judaism defines stages and others do. Confucius has nothing to say before 15. He begins by saying, "At 15 I set my heart upon learning." Solon, the ancient Greek lawgiver, talks about how before you're 7 years old, you're nothing really, and then at 7, you start to show manhood. You remember the stages from Shakespeare. At first, the infant mewling and puking in the nurse's arms, the whining schoolboy with his satchel and shining morning face. creeping like a snail unwillingly to school, and then the lover sighing like a furnace with a woeful ballad. And then there's Erickson, who defines stages psychodynamically, trust and mistrust, autonomy versus shame and doubt. And then you come to the Talmud. How does our tradition define the stages of life? At 5 years old, you should be studying Torah. At 10, you should be studying Mishnah. At 13, the mitzvot. At 14, the Gemara, the Talmud, until you get to 18, and then you're ready for marriage. But without going 18 on, notice what the definition is. The stages of growth are stages of study. And learning is central. Because after all, if you're going to be a child of Aaron, you have to know what to do. And then there is a second message here about the priests, the sons of Aaron. You know that Kohanim, priests, are not traditionally permitted to go into a graveyard because they can get tumah, impurity. There is one other class of people in the Jewish tradition who are not allowed to go into a graveyard, the Nazir, somebody who takes upon themselves a vow of abstaining. However, if you're a Kohen, when are you allowed to go into a graveyard? For your immediate family, right? A Nazir is not allowed to go into a graveyard for his immediate family. So why, you ask, is a Kohen allowed to do it if a Nazir is not? According to one commentator, the Shem Mishmuel, it's because your family makes you a Kohen. Who you are is dependent on your family. And that's true. Whether you draw your family close or you push them away, you are who you are largely because they are who they are. And you may think that you're a priest, but really, deep down, in the middle of the night, you know you're a son of Aaron. That's who you are. It is your human connection and not your chosen vow or chosen field that defines you at the most fundamental level. The language you speak, the city you grew up in, the early associations you had, where you went to school, those are all the products of your family. And that's why, and this is, I think, the culminating point, your family matters more than your work. Your children matter more than your work. I said I would return to Fishinantam Livanecha. Let me tell you a beautiful interpretation of something we have all said hundreds, thousands of times. When you begin the paragraph of the Shema, it says, you shall love God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And then it says, V'hayu ha-devarim ha'ela, and these things, these words, which I command you this day, shall be on your heart. Vishinantem levanecha, and you shall teach them to your children. Vidibartabam, and speak of them. Okay? I don't know how many times I've read that. And I always assumed that it only had one meaning. These words you should teach to your children, and you should speak these words, vidibartabam, when you lie down, when you rise up, when you go. All that's what we all learned. But an English rabbi, Isaac Bernstein, said, when it says you should teach these to your children and speak of them, another way to understand it should be speaking about your children. Vidibartabam is letting parents know, go around, tell people about your kids. Let them know how proud you are of what your children do. In fact, there was a psychologist named Chaim Janat who used to say, if you want your children to be good, let them overhear the good things you say about them. So that they'll know that you take Vidibartabam seriously. That yes, you're proud of your work, you're proud of your accomplishments, but you're most proud of your family. Vidibartabam, speak about them. Remember that being a Kohen is less important than being B'nai Aharon. In this Parsha, one of the things that the commentators note, all of them, is the repetition of the word say at the very beginning. You should say, God says to Moses, to the children of Israel, to the priests, and so on, and then he repeats saying. From which we learn that everything important in this world has to be said again and again and again. There is no message that we don't have to constantly drum into ourselves so that we remember it and live it, so that we make it, as I said earlier about the Ner Tamid, regular, over and over and over again. I bring this up because it's not only about children. Tomorrow's Mother's Day. I don't mean to put a panic in all of you who have not yet ordered flowers or cards, but tomorrow is Mother's Day. And you know, the Navi, the prophet, Amos, talks about Israel being God's firstborn. And one of the commentators says, why does it matter that Israel is God's firstborn? And his answer is that being first doesn't make you best, but being first changes the definition. You're not a parent till you have a child. It is the child that makes a parent a parent. And that's part of the recognition of B'nai Aharon, that we define each other, that as parents we're defined by our children, and as children by our parents, as husbands by our wives, as wives by our husbands, as brothers and sisters, all of the network of relationships that is part of our lives. And we try sometimes to define ourselves by our work because, frankly, it's cleaner and easier. Families are messy. They're difficult. They're draining. They're who we are. Who are the priests? They're the sons of Aaron. And who are we? How do we refer to ourselves? B'nai Yisrael. We are the children of Israel. We too are defined, each of us, by our connection to one another, by our connection to those in our lives whom we care for and whom we love. Not by our tasks, or at least not by our tasks alone, but by the strings that tie heart to heart, soul to soul. It is a small phrase, after all. Speak to the priests, to the sons of Aaron. But the Torah doesn't waste words, and it doesn't need to. We understand. We understand that that means that we are engaged in teaching, in learning, in definitions of ourselves and of our souls that embrace our families and our community. You know that even in ancient times, writers used to say that what defined the Jewish world were the close connections of family. And when I talked about speaking about your kids, I'm sure that some of you rolled your eyes, because what are Jewish parents known for? Bragging about their kids. But how much better that is than speaking about them disparagingly or not talking about them at all. So if nothing else, on Mother's Day, don't only praise your parenting, but praise your kids. Let them know that all of us recognize that we are defined by who we are together, not only who we are alone. And we pray that God grant that our lives be enriched through work, but that they be made holy through family, through decency, through faith, and through love. Shabbat Shalom.